Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. What is today's date? Does anyone know? September 7th.
September
2016. Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and I'm here with my two older brothers, Taj and Terrell, and our good friend, Henry Hebert. What's going on?
Hello.
Everyone?
What's going on, T?
So we are live, so if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. And this is show number 5.
Wow. 5.
We're doing it.
Yep.
Later on, we will be opening up to take a few questions via Twitter. So if you have a question about our topic, which is loss and grief, and you want to ask, then send us a tweet at DDJ Foundation.
And here's my disclaimer. We aren't licensed therapists.
No, we're not.
We're people who have experienced death and loss and are sharing our experiences to try to help those who have also been impacted by it. Now, this week we have an awesome show because we have an awesome show.
Okay.
We're going to learn about the steps to recovery for grief, which is awesome. We're going to learn about signs people show when they're experiencing grief. We are going to learn about the different types of losses. And we're also going to learn how grief gets misdiagnosed. This happens all the time. And we're going to learn about much, much more. So I'm excited. Let's get into it.
So am I. So last week, our guest, Sharon Ellers, shared with us how the suicides of a close friend and a former fiancé within a 2-year period affected her and what she did that helped her. Well, after working in corporate America for almost 30 years, Sharon decided to start her own company to offer a multidimensional approach to grief through emotional recovery and spiritual healing. She is now a certified grief recovery specialist with the Grief Recovery Institute and a Reiki master. Sharon is helping others to heal and recover from grief by providing them with a safe, compassionate, and healing environment for their journey. And today, we brought Sharon back to tell us about this approach. Welcome back, Sharon.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
Sharon was awesome last
week.
So we all felt you had to come back. So thank you for coming
back. We have so much more to learn from you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So first question, what is a grief recovery specialist?
A grief recovery specialist goes through a particular program through the Grief Recovery Institute here in Sherman Oaks to help us learn the process and the actions that it takes to get through unresolved grief. We go through the program ourselves and we work on our own losses, and then we have the ability to work with other people in helping them get through their grief.
So can you explain what is grief recovery method? Like, what does that mean?
The grief recovery method is an actionable program that helps you get through the difficult emotions associated with the pain and loss dealing with grief. And a lot of times, you know, we don't have the opportunity to really address those things. We just sort of push them down and tuck them away and let them fester. And the grief recovery method gives you those actions that you need to deal with those and to move forward with your grief.
I don't even think people realize that there is an actionable process to get through grief.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is an actionable process, and this is part of what we teach. You know, becoming aware of your losses in your life and how many you've had. You know, sometimes you've had all kinds of losses. Accepting responsibility for those losses, getting through them. Doing the recovery communications, the apologies, the forgivenesses, taking the action steps to move forward.
And how long has this been around?
The grief recovery method has actually been around for about 35 years, which is hard to believe. I didn't know until I was grieving that it existed, but it's been around for about 35 years.
And this came through research? Like, how did they figure this method out?
Well, John James, who's the original founder of the grief recovery method, had lost an infant son soon after birth, and as a part of his grieving process back in the 70s, realized that there wasn't really anything available to him to help him get through his grief. So after going through a divorce, he decided that he would, you know, pull this program together and study grief more deeply.
And how does grief recovery method define grief?
There's a number of definitions, but it's primarily the normal and natural reaction to loss. It's an emotional response to losing somebody in your life or to having a event happen, as well as it is reaching out for someone who's always been there only to realize that when you need them one more time, they're no longer there. It's a change in, you know, your typical pattern of behavior. It's making things that are different in your life and your reaction to those. And that could mean a number of things.
So I think in the book it talks about grief is the conflicting feelings caused by the end of or change in familiar pattern of behavior, which I, like when I was reading the book, I was like, oh, this is so interesting that I didn't realize that I had conflicting feelings when I lost my friend, when my friend Jeremy died.
Right.
That I was happy that he was no longer in pain, but yet I also, you know, really missed him and him actually being able to talk to him. So is that what they mean by conflicting feelings?
Exactly correct. And for things like divorce, for example, you may be relieved that you're no longer in the relationship, but you're also expressing sadness for the future, you know, unmet hopes and dreams that aren't going to happen as well. And so you feel very conflicted in feeling those things simultaneously.
And so are there signs that people are going through grief?
There are so many different common responses that we tend to forget about. Reduced concentration is one of the primary ones. You just can't focus. You just don't feel like you're 100% there. You almost feel like you're walking around in a fog. That's a big one. I think we talked about last week, it takes maybe 4 to 6 seconds longer for a griever to even respond to anything because their mind is sort of not in the present moment. You have a roller coaster of emotions. You can be up one day, you can be down for a number of days after that. You can also have a change in your sleeping patterns. You sleep a lot. Some people, you know, crawl in bed and put the covers over their head and that's it. And others like me who don't sleep are up at night, you know, trying to figure out life. And then food, you know, you either eat everything inside or you don't eat anything at all, right? You know, some people just go straight for the chocolate cake, you know, lunch, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And
I always do that anyway.
And then others couldn't even, you know, the sight of food makes them sick to their stomach. So those are all very normal and natural reactions to loss.
So, and maybe I'm jumping the gun here, but there's a diagnosis you can do for someone besides, is it basically, are all these things you mentioned pretty much how you would diagnose if someone is going through grief?
Yes.
Is there a doctor you could see to diagnose, or is this kind of, you have to kind of make
Does it get misdiagnosed?
I think what happens more is that it gets misdiagnosed. You know, we're taught not to be sad. So as soon as we're grieving or trying to recover from a loss and we start to feel sad and we think something's wrong with us and so we go to the doctor, oftentimes it's diagnosed rather than as grief, which is normal and natural, as being depression. And the doctor is very, apt to maybe put you on some medication, which in for all intents and purposes masks your grief rather than allows you to address it.
Yeah.
So a lot of times grief gets misdiagnosed.
Well, even when you were saying one day you can be up and the next day you can be down, that could sound like a whole nother, like if you go into a doctor and say I'm happy and then I'm sad, you could really be misdiagnosed into
exactly.
a whole nother category.
Right, and I think that's why it's so important that if you're not feeling 100%, to know that those reactions to grief are absolutely normal. I think we start, because we don't talk about it enough, people start to get worried that what they're going through is abnormal, and in that sense, they go to the doctor, and maybe they haven't told the doctor that they're grieving, and the doctor just figures they're depressed.
I think a lot of times, too, people assume if they experience a loss that after a certain amount of time, the loss is no longer valid to be acting a certain way. And, you know, I think a loss can stay with you for literally years and decades. So I think people have to respect that grief, if it's not handled properly, will stay with you.
And what about, like, are there, like, stages to the loss? Do you check them off one by one?
Well, I think in reality, you know, everybody grieves individually because your relationship with the person or the event is a unique relationship. And I think what happens is that people feel that they have to be going through these five stages of grief, which, you know, include anger and depression and all of these things. In reality, it isn't linear. It's not sequential. It's kind of all over the place, and it's unique to you. So I'm not going to grieve the same way that Henry will grieve and the way that you would grieve.
Mm-hmm. Everybody's grieving like me?
We all grieve differently. We all grieve differently. There's no real, you know, you can't map it out because everybody has a different relationship that they're grieving for.
But I've always been taught that in terms of the stages of grief, like first there's denial, and then is that true?
I think what happened was when Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote about the five stages of grief, she really wrote that for people who were facing terminal illness and what they would be going through. And unfortunately, it got applied to what all grievers go through, and that's not really the reality. And people get so caught up worried about what stage they're in that they forget to actually grieve. So no, it's not really applicable to the grieving process, because everybody, like we said, has an individual relationship with the situation, and they're going to grieve in the way that's right for them.
So you could be sad one day, in denial the next day. You could be angry the next day, happy the next day.
You can be all of that in one day. You know, that's that's unfortunately the difficulty of grief and loss.
So what are the other types of losses, like a breakup in a relationship, divorce, loss of health, loss of career, financial issues, loss of faith, death of a pet? What about even if you've grown up in a dysfunctional home or you have like an alcoholic with alcoholic parents? Are all these like major loss events that can also contribute to grief and also kind of the grief recovery method apply to it?
Yes, absolutely. There's about 43 different loss experiences that we can go through in our life. Something that may seem as simple as graduating from college and going out into the real world, right? Where you have to face the fact that you're not in a, you know, in a secluded little world anymore.
Is that one of the 43?
Yeah, it can be a grieving experience.
Wow.
Going from high school and moving into college.
Because you're happy and then you're sad because you're leaving something behind. So
right.
It's the conflicting emotions in terms of the definition that...
That's
right.
Pretty amazing.
You're not a kid anymore, right? Now you have to be an adult. Now you have to be away from home. So that's a very good example of a grief experience that we don't normally think about.
Absolutely.
What about moving?
As a mom, your kids going away to school is a grieving experience. You know, having a miscarriage, infertility is a grieving experience. Loss of trust, loss of safety. People who don't feel safe, you know, that affects you as a grieving experience as well. If somebody's let you down, if your belief in God has changed, religion, you know, loss of faith is huge, a huge grieving experience. You thought God would be there and he wasn't, you know.
So the word recovery, what does that mean? Like, I think I have an idea, but specifically... Is there a certain thing I'm looking for when the word recovery?
I think with recovery, you know, grief is often intellectualized instead of looked at from an emotional perspective. And recovery means taking the perspective that you're going to look at it with your heart and not your head. Mm-hmm. You know, we tend to think our way through things. We're like, if I only do this and I analyze it, then I'm going to be okay. But the thing about grief is feeling it. So recovering means claiming your circumstances, you know, knowing that it's okay to be sad when you're grieving and accepting that and not trying to push it away or pretend like it's not happening.
So facing it.
Facing it, absolutely.
And then how do you recover from grief?
Well, there's a series of actions that you have to go through the grief recovery program, and one of them is being aware of how you deal with grief in your life, the kinds of losses that may still be causing you pain. And we go back and look, we actually create a loss history graph, go back through our lives and look at the things that may have caused us pain, and then how we deal with them. You know, have we faced them? Have we pushed them aside? Have we compartmented them somewhere nicely where they're just floating along? Taking those things, accepting responsibility, we have to take at least 1% responsibility for the things that we do. And not
including our feelings, like our own feelings, instead of pushing the blame onto someone else?
Right. And pushing the blame on other people, you make them responsible for fixing it. And really, the only person that can fix it is you. And so that's one of the big things, is taking responsibility for how you react, at least 1% responsibility for how you react to your situations with loss. Looking at the recovery communications, which includes, you know, apologizing, which we don't always like to do, forgiving, which we certainly don't like to do sometimes. And then those things that were left unsaid. You know, I wished I had done this. I wished I had said this. I wish I hadn't said this. And kind of bringing those things forward.
And that comes to forgiveness, though, too. Forgiveness of self and then others.
Forgiveness, sometimes more of yourself than of the other person, you know, especially when somebody's passed away. And for me, thinking about my friends, what could I have done differently so that they didn't commit suicide? Well, I had no, you know, I had no say into that. That was their choice. And so therefore, you know, I have to forgive myself and I have to let go of those things so that I can move forward.
Terrell and I are parents, and as a parent, if our child experiences some type of grief, what would you recommend us do as parents for them?
The best thing for parents to do, for adults to do, is to be honest about their own grief and not try to hide it, because then kids will think it's not safe to talk about being sad. So if you're sad, or if you experienced something similar when you were younger, let's say a pet dies, you can talk about how you felt when your pet died and how it made you feel, and that gives them permission. They take cues from adults, so it gives them the permission to feel those things and to express those things and know that it's healthy and it's okay.
So in the book, they said most important recovery means acquiring the skills that we should have been taught in childhood, which I think is really interesting that we weren't taught these skills as children. And then these skills allow us to deal with loss directly. And I also think what TJ was asking, too, just in terms of being a parent, in terms of loss. So would it be the case then, say as adults, you go through the grief recovery method and you learn these skills, and then you're able to then help your own children out by when they have loss? Like, I mean, I'll be honest, in high school, when I had that first boyfriend that broke my heart, if my mom, you know, I had understood these skills to then give me those skills back then, I'd be in a whole different situation in terms of how I looked at loss and grief. Mm-hmm. But she just didn't know.
Absolutely. And I think that's how we were raised.
Is that something, I don't know if that's what you were asking. Like,
absolutely.
You know.
I just think as a parent, I guess the answer is you got to be able to relate to them and just be honest and you know, share your own personal experiences
absolutely
with them so they don't feel alone.
Well, it could be anything, too.
And
even
they feel
like
comfortable talking.
Too. Like, if you
when
lose
they
a
lose
game,
exactly,
you could apply it to that as well.
Well, I didn't lose. So.
You never lose. So in terms of, I also thought something was interesting is they talk about how we're taught how to acquire things, but we're not taught what to do when we lose them.
Yeah.
So
right.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I think society has put us in a situation where, you know, it's all about acquiring, whether it's materialistic kinds of things, whether it's financial, whatever. But then there is really no discussion about what you do when you lose it. And so you hear people who've gone bankrupt, you know, taking extreme action because the failure that they feel from that, you know, is not attributable. So, yeah, we've spent too much time worrying and not really dealing with loss in general and what you do when you do lose something.
Because just even looking back at my own childhood and from reading the book, they talk about how we try to acquire parents' praise. And even it could even go from later on to trying to acquire toys by being good. And you don't realize that, you know, you're being taught to acquire, but then once you lose that toy per se and you feel that feeling of sadness or something being taken away and somebody's not giving it to you, could then go into like rejection almost.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you're left with these difficult emotions, but then you're told to be happy about
and right, or to be strong.
And for me, I'm guilty of that, because if my kids lose something, I'll say it's part of life, you know, and that's it. You know, it's like, just deal with it kind of thing. So I'm at fault there as well.
So when he's saying it's part of life, like, what is that called in the grief recovery method?
It's part of life.
Is that like intellectualizing? Is that like something we say?
I think that's intellectualizing it. And I think, you know, if you speak from your heart and you say, you know, I know you're really sad. I know you must really be sad that you lost your favorite Fluffy. You know, I felt that way when I lost my Fluffy. But, you know, and then you can kind of quantify it. But I think acknowledging and recognizing the emotions the child's feeling with it, that way they won't start to block them and hide them and take them into their adulthood, like probably we've all
done. Does that go with the myths then that we're taught about in dealing with grief? Like, don't feel bad, replace the loss, grieve alone.
Right, and
be strong for others.
Exactly, and I think the myths have been passed down, unfortunately, from generation to generation, whether we realize it or not, that, you know, you should be grieving alone, that you should be strong for, you know, especially as a sibling, you should be strong for, you know, for others.
So, TJ, you're not alone.
No, yeah, I'm guilty. So
you're just one of many.
I know. It's true, though. Some of those phrases I do find myself saying, thinking that's the proper way to handle it, and, you know, because you hear life isn't fair. You know, and I do believe life isn't fair. So it's like, that's part of life, or just deal with it, or, you know, you gotta just get stronger from it. Those are phrases that come out of my mouth sometimes. So I'm guilty of that. I gotta figure a way to kind of relate
and
to it.
And I realize that when I say a phrase like that, that I'm not hearing what the person's actually saying and hearing their emotion. If somebody says, oh, I you know, just broke up with so-and-so and I'm feeling sad, I sometimes say, well, there's plenty of fish in the sea. Yeah. There's someone else.
Right.
and then I realize I've not even heard what they've said. And here they are, then they shut down.
Because you're just trying to make them stronger and trying to uplift
them. I'm intellectualizing
them.
It, though.
Yes, absolutely. So,
but I'm not hearing them. And in that moment, it's like they either want a hug or they just want to be heard.
Yeah.
And hearing their feelings, not their intelligence.
Right. I think that's the most important point, is that grievers want to be heard. They want to be able to share their story. They don't want to be analyzed or criticized or judged. They want to be able to share their emotions, and they don't want you to intellectualize with them.
Not to like steer us in a completely different direction, but I believe you said something last week, something to the effect of the deeper your love, the harder the grief, or something like that, I think.
Yes, I said that.
And we all have different experiences, and we all have different relationships and things. And I think I know the answer to this. What is the time limit? What is the time frame? Because we're all different, and we all deal with things differently. And there's triggers. It's like my brothers and I, obviously we've lost our mother and our uncle, and we're now in September, but August is a tough month for us. And it seems like, I mean, it's been over 20 years that I've lost, you know, that we've lost our mother, and I'm still in a position, I'm still in a spot where it's very difficult for me.
I think
it feels like, you know, it just happened, and every time that time comes, it's like you relive it.
Yeah, and that, first of all, I'm sorry for your losses, both of those. I can't imagine what you went through. I think it's one of those myths that we've been taught that time heals all wounds, and in reality, time doesn't heal. And I think we're waiting for that switch to say, you know, that switch to flip, to say that, okay, you're done, but we're never done. So part of the grief recovery method teaches you how to let go of the pain that's associated with your grieving, and so that you can still have fond emotions, you can still be sad, but it's not painful. And I think the fact that there are triggers is healthy, because you love that person with your whole entire heart. And so choosing to remember them rather than having those special days sort of be like these beacons that are flashing in front of you, like, I can't. My friend Joy died October 10th, so that's coming up. And so in the beginning, it was really hard to face that. But now I think I welcome that day, because it allows me to remember the good stuff about her. It allows me to think about her, allows me to talk to other people about it. And I think if we put this false sense of time will make it better, that doesn't necessarily happen. You can get let go of the pain associated with it, but you're always going to have those fond memories. You're always going to feel some sort of sadness, and I don't think that ever goes away. You just have to embrace it and accept it.
I think what you said, which was really interesting, is going through this process, you learn to let go of the pain because you were heartbroken, and that's something that the program talks about, being heartbroken.
Yes.
And you let go of the pain, and once you were able to let go of the pain through going through the steps of the process, you then discovered that you were in the space of being able to have fond memories and not being so associated with the pain.
Right, absolutely. With joy in the beginning, because I hadn't addressed this, I mean, joy's name is Christmas, right? I mean, you can't walk anywhere where you don't see the word joy. And I avoided going out during the holidays for that reason. After taking the program, I realized that it wasn't really her name out there. It was really the things I hadn't addressed. So now I actually welcome walking into Michael's and seeing the word joy. It reminds me of her and the crazy blonde jokes and shopping at, you know, all hours of the day and night.
And then the things that you were saying that you hadn't addressed, I think, is it similar then in terms of what Terrell is saying about triggers? Because right. I think a therapist has once told me that triggers are just for you to kind of see what's happening and for you to become aware, because it's something that's been buried that you may not be aware of.
Exactly.
And so to start becoming, noticing where those emotions and what trigger, and then kind of looking within yourself.
Well, there's so many things that are unresolved when somebody passes away, right? Or when in a relationship, you know, the things that you didn't get to do, or the things that you wished you had done differently, or the hopes and dreams that you had for the future. And so through the program, it gives you an opportunity to kind of actually address those things, say them out loud, get through them so that they're not buried, kind of, you know, festering, waiting to kind of bubble out and explode.
Will grief always be tricky? And what I mean by that is there's times where I can hear my uncle's music and it'll make me smile. And then there's times where I could hear his music and it'll make me cry. Is it always going to be like that?
That is the unfortunate part of grief, yeah. And I think facing that there are going to be happy times and there are going to be sad times associated with it is important, because, you know, the memories that are brought forward aren't always going to be happy. And you have to take an honest, objective look and say, you know, life isn't just happy and life isn't just sad. So we're going to have days where we're going to have both happy and sad emotions. And that's normal and natural. And that's what it means to be human.
One of the things I'm always lost on is if a friend or family member loses someone that's very dear to them, I'm just speechless. I don't know really how to, you know, how to approach that. Is there any advice you would give me if I, you know, my best friend lost a parent or a family member?
Yeah, the best thing to say is that you don't know what to say, and you said it perfectly. I mean, because what are the words? I mean, if we intellectualize it, we say those things that we've been taught to say, like they're in a better place, or, you know, they're not having any more pain, that doesn't really help your friend's heart. And I think last week we talked about hugs. I think saying you don't know what to say, I'm sorry for your loss, I can't imagine what you're going through, and then giving that person a hug is probably the best thing that you can do for them. And then being there to just listen and let them tell their story, because, again, grievers just want to be heard. They don't want to be analyzed or judged. But just being there as a friend, checking in on them, making sure that they're okay.
Yeah, and that's something I wanted to also say, but we ran out of time. You mentioned double grief, right? How important it is, if you know somebody that's going through something, how important it is for you to be there, because if you're not there and they need you, they can experience the double grief.
It's like getting hit twice, right? Not only have you lost your loved one, but then your friends are avoiding you. And I felt that way too. I felt very isolated and alone because people didn't know what to say, so they stayed away. And so you're not only grieving for your loss, but you're grieving for the loss of your friendship. So you're absolutely right, reaching out. And again, even if you don't know what to say, just say that. I don't know what to say, but I'm here. If you ever need, you know, a hug or to listen, just being there. I think that's the best gift as a friend. I wished I had had more of that when I was grieving.
What I think is also interesting, the book talks about how a lot of people are afraid of feelings, specifically like negative emotions. And I think because in our society, we're taught to smile. Everything's amazing and great. And you're taught to like get a hold of yourself. You can't possibly fall apart. And I, like, just looking back now in my so many years, I've realized that there's moments where I've tried to like have that moment where I've reached out to people, and because of the flurry of emotions, it hasn't come out in a way that's been so just calm and beautiful. Mm-hmm. As negative emotions sometimes volcano up. And I've had friends that have just reacted in a way that caused me, like, probably the double grief in terms of, like, the rejection. And then I'm left with how I felt before and then afterwards. And I think it's like, now I'm learning, though, it's as a society, we've been taught to kind of move through our world like that. And so now I actually have a lot more compassion just for like my friends and my family, because they didn't know either, and they didn't realize that this was happening. Because we don't understand, we're not really understanding as a society emotions in general, the positive and negative, and how negative can actually be really helpful.
Well, and when you're grieving, you're so all over the place. You don't even know how you're going to react sometimes. So it's important that your friends are there and try to understand and not take it personally. And that's what we tend to do when somebody reacts like that, is we make it all about us rather than, like you said, being compassionate and looking at the other person and trying to understand what they're going through.
We have Sharon Ellers with us. And Sharon, I'm such a big fan of you. So thank you for being here with us. And through our foundation, the D.D. Jackson Foundation, we are shining a light on loss and grief and how it impacts us. And to all of our listeners, we want to know what your story of loss and grief is. How have you been able to cope? We are building a community, so we need your help. And if you're just tuning in and want to learn more about the foundation, go to www.ddjf.org.
Good job.
Felt like I threw an extra D in for some reason. www.ddjf.org.
Once again, we are live on the Power of Love radio show. If you are listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on in our show, we will open it up to taking a few questions via Twitter. So if you have a specific question for Sharon on our topic of loss and grief, then send us a tweet at DDJ Foundation.
And Taj is over there on the computer checking out tweets. Right,
That's
Taj?
Odd.
There it is, talk back.
Like the suspense.
So last week, I found something that was actually really cool, and I was surprised to hear it. And Miss Henry is going to share what I found out last week, right?
Conveniently, I told you guys once we were off air.
Yeah, exactly. I said that. I said, why didn't you say that while
exactly.
we were here?
Exactly. Well, I am going through the 7-week grief recovery method with Sharon, and I
Love
just
it.
Completed week two on Sunday with Sharon.
Sweet.
And it's been really interesting. I'm definitely, one of the things I'm learning, there's a lot I'm learning, actually. One of them is that people tend to say, I'm fine, and I am so guilty of saying, I'm fine. I do it all the time. And then I've just really learned how much we don't talk about, even though our foundation is about loss and grief. I'm really learning about how much we don't talk about loss and grief as mm-hmm. a society. And through this program, it's amazing now to kind of, I've tried over the years to improve my well-being in many, many ways. And I just always had this lingering feeling that I wasn't understanding something about how I was feeling. And now I've begun utilizing these tools to connect the dots for myself about how much loss and grief that I've experienced, which really has negatively impacted me in ways that I didn't even realize until this program.
So what have you realized that has really helped you?
Well, let me tell you. There are other loss experiences that can produce grief in our everyday world that I didn't know about. I really just thought if a loved one died or a pet died, that was grief and that was it. Mm-hmm. But it's not just death of a loved one or a pet, but there's relationship breakup, end of addictions, or even like happy events like you mentioned before, graduating, marriage, or even major health changes, retirement, financial changes, positive or negative, holidays, legal problems, empty nest. And, the book actually talks about how often these common life experiences are not seen as grieving events, but they really are, which I, now looking at my life in the last 5 years, my best friend Jeremy died 5 years ago. I've experienced a loved one dying. As a producer in reality TV, I would move shows every 3 months, so I was constantly saying goodbye to people that I enjoyed working with. So that was another loss and grief. Through losing my best friend Jeremy, I actually, some of my friends didn't know how to handle my grief because I was no longer Happy Henry, which is probably where the I'm fine came from. I actually lost a couple friends because they just didn't know what to do, and they just thought, oh, she's no longer happy, so let me exit this right now, which then caused me to have the double grief, which I'm now realizing. And so I have more compassion for my friends now. And then I actually, my dog of 12 years died, and then I moved to a new neighborhood, so I said goodbye to people that I loved being with, that I was there for 6 years, and I had some health challenges just from a stressful, work environment. And so now I look at all this, and I'm like, wow, this is just in 5 years. And in the last couple of years, I've just been wondering, like, how can I feel better? And I've been seeing all these other people, and really, I wasn't addressing what was happening, which was the loss and grief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I already feel better just in 2 weeks, because I think part of it is just understanding what I was actually going through.
Mm.
And I think I was looking outside of myself for someone just to tell me, hey, this is what's happening to you.
That's great. That's great.
Does that make sense?
It does.
You know what the biggest one is, actually? Loss of trust. I didn't realize loss of trust, mm-hmm. how you can have grief from that. And I can look back into my childhood, and I had certain moments where, like, loss of trust with a teacher, or loss of trust with just, you know,
anyone.
And now I realize as an adult how much that's affected me, or even loss of trust, you know, just as an adult with people. Have you guys experienced, like, loss of trust?
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the music industry, and in the music industry, that can happen quite a bit.
You ever think loss of trust was one?
I would.
You're asking.
I think it would happen.
With grief?
Yeah.
Would. Oh no, I wouldn't equate it to grief.
To grief.
No. I wouldn't equate it to grief. That's for sure.
Well,
I think you're not to
but
grief.
But now, because you're thinking
loss
about
of trust, well, it depends who the trust is from. I mean,
it makes
if
sense.
If it's from
though.
Your best friend, yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Of course,
but even
you would lose a friend.
But even like little losses of trust can add up, and kind of it's like a disappointment in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even that at that small level, it's like disappointing. You know, there's times where if I'm, you know, I don't really watch the news, but if someone's watching the news and I see something that's just sad, and you wouldn't think I'm grieving, but in reality, just that sad story about a loss or something can actually affect you. So maybe that's why I don't watch the news, because I don't, you know.
But isn't it interesting how you're now thinking back
Absolutely.
To those moments, which is kind of what's happening through me through this process of the last 2 weeks. I'm actually looking back at my life and kind of noticing, oh, that's what was happening at that moment.
So I'm going to declare something.
Okay.
I've always said in our schools there should be more financial classes that are required.
Literacy.
Yeah, financial literacy. I'm going to also declare there should be some grief literacy and grief understanding classes.
Emotions, an emotional literacy class.
We grow up, like I've said before, I don't know if I said it here, but we grow up celebrating when we win, we get trophies, and we all have fun and everything, but we have to learn how to understand and deal and cope with loss. And I think that's something that our entire society kind of overlooks.
I agree. So we do have some listeners that have asked us about relationships, and so I'm going to say, ask you, Sharon, can we use my broken relationship as...
Oh,
I forgot to mention that in the 5 years. I said goodbye to somebody that I was in love with because it just wasn't... We don't live in the same city. That broke my heart.
And
a year later, I'm still trying to recover from it. So can we use my broken romantic relationship as an example of how grief recovery may possibly help me, which may will also explain to our listeners how grief recovery method does work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a good example because there's, especially in a breakup, if you haven't resolved things, there's these unresolved grieving issues or loss issues between. If you don't face those and you don't address them, then you carry them with you to the next relationship, and it becomes emotional baggage.
So I don't want that to happen. Yeah, I haven't broken up in 2 decades, but my question is...
You want to know what it's like?
What is the proper way to break up? Because if you have to kind of resolve issues, a lot of times that quickly tips into back in a relationship, you know?
Some people
have the mentality... I better just, you know, delete them from my phone or delete her from my phone and just move on, you know?
Yeah, I think it's impossible to actually sit down with somebody and try to work these things out. And sometimes you don't want to, right? You know, it's not the healthiest thing to do, but you have to do it for yourself.
Okay.
So you have to be introspective and look at yourself objectively and say, okay, you know, again, what is the awareness of the things that I did or didn't bring into the relationship? You know, what are the things that I could have done differently? What responsibility or accountability do I take for why things did or didn't work out? And address those things rather than pushing them all down and pretending like they didn't happen, because that's when you carry it into the next relationship and the poor guy won't know what hit him, right?
I think the hardest part, too, in terms of like a broken relationship, like in thinking about how you feel sad, but at the same time, you do have the conflicting feeling of like, okay, in my heart, I understand that it's time to move on and that there's hope for the future. But yet you still can get sucked back into the sadness and the hope of why didn't it work out in the past and we were so in love.
Yeah, I think admitting and looking that there were probably certain hopes and dreams for the future. I mean, that a lot of times with a breakup, you may be happy. I said, like with my divorce, you know, I knew it was the right thing to do intellectually, right? It was the right thing to do. But emotionally, it doesn't mean that I wasn't sad about it because we had hopes and dreams of the future, right? We had kids, we were going to retire, we were going to have the house in the country, whatever it was. And those things now aren't going to happen anymore. Mm. And so recognizing that it's healthy and normal to be sad about those things is probably the right way to go.
So then can a person get over losing like a loved one, whether in death or from a breakup?
There's a difference between getting over and letting go of pain. So I think a person can let go of the pain and move forward. I think that's a healthier way to look at it.
So are there habits or like, you know, do you have to develop new habits for this? Like, what is the kind of course of action?
Well, a lot of it is looking at how you actually deal with loss and grief in your own life. You know, do you approach it or do you avoid it? And for people who avoid it, it's much more difficult because they tend to push it down and compartmentalize it so that it doesn't rear its ugly head. And so part of the relationship thing is to allow the emotions to come forward in a healthy and honest way.
So when we're pushing down the emotions, is that what's called the unresolved grief?
That's unresolved grief, and oftentimes we use other short-term energy relieving kinds of behaviors to mask the grief, like working, you know, workaholism, shopping, over-exercising.
That was interesting, realizing the short-term, is it called short-term energy?
Energy relieving.
So basically, this is what I learned from myself.
Share.
So when you're going through loss and grief, you are pushing down all these feelings, and you all of a sudden, you'll go to food or whatever your short-term energy release is, because the energy, it's emotion. I mean, it's
almost like you get a euphoria. I don't know it's a replacement, right?
Well, so when you're going through grief and loss, there's a certain amount of energy that it takes, and so it's depleting you essentially of energy, and you don't realize how much energy it's taking you to process the grief and loss because you're actually pushing it down. But you will want to feel better, and you don't even realize why you want to feel better. So then next thing you know, you find yourself reaching for food or reaching for alcohol, and basically it's something that's short-term that's going to make you feel better, when the reality is you're processing grief and loss, and you have no idea that you're processing the grief and loss. You just want to feel better. So you reach for the food, you reach for the alcohol, or you go exercise, or it could be workaholic too. I was working 80-hour weeks. I was trying to push away the grief.
And then in doing all that, you don't even tackle the grief aspect.
Yeah.
So
it
then
can be
you're still
too,
at step one.
Watching too much television. Guilty. I looked at the list and I was like, there's food. I was like, working too much. Oh my God. I was like, TV, too much television. I've done the retail therapy. Yeah. I literally was checking the list. Except for a few of them.
Yeah, wow. And TJ made an important point that you don't address your grief when you're doing those things because you're feeling better. You know, the chocolate cake makes you feel better, but the grief is not being...
I was working... Okay, I will admit it. During X Factor, I was working 80-hour weeks, and then I was coming home at like 2 in the morning knowing I did not have any food in my fridge. I would stop off and buy pizza rolls.
Mm.
And I became like sort of addicted to like pizza rolls. I will admit that. and then I eventually saw a nutritionist and she's like, what are you doing? There's no nutrition in pizza rolls. But I realized now I was trying to cope with my grief of losing Jeremy.
Right.
Wow.
Well, we are building a community of support on our social media. Taj, do we have any questions?
Yes, we do. We have a couple questions.
Nice.
One is from Betty. Betty wants to know, she says, I lost a high school friend and beyond a couple of days ago. I'm wondering, what is the strategy to cope with wakes/funerals and the wake of funerals tomorrow for her?
It is a good question, and I think because of what society has taught us to do, most times people tend to avoid those because they don't want to express their emotions, when in reality, it's much more healthy, and it's actually I don't want to say sanctioned, safe place, but, you know, if you're going to grieve, a wake or a funeral is a place to go. And being in a community where you can show your emotions, where people are reaching out and together is a very healthy thing. So facing the wake and the funeral is probably the best way to go for you emotionally.
You also said something, I think, last week about after you go to a wake or a funeral, you can have like 3 weeks where you get sick. Can you explain that?
I think what happens, and you just mentioned it, is that grief is an energy depleting emotion, and the emotions associated with grieving, you know, just wipe you out. A lot of times that brings your resistance down, that brings your health into a place where you end up being more prone to illnesses and accidents. So grievers are often very much in the sense of getting sick, you know, after they've been through one of those experiences. But if you let the emotions come out and you share those emotions, you have a better chance of not going to that place.
And what's interesting is if you do get sick, people might end up saying like, oh, I just caught a cold or I got the flu, not realizing that it could may have come from, you know, may have been triggered from the loss and grief, because you are essentially repressing it. And like you said, the grief is a certain amount of energy too.
Exactly. And that's why if you go to the doctor, it's important to let them know emotionally what's going on in your life. It helps them to see the bigger picture when they're diagnosing you.
Taj, another one?
Yeah, well, Lori, she said, so happy Sharon is on again.
Hey! Sharon's the best, I'm telling you.
She's amazing.
We agree. And someone wants to know, Edwina wants to know, Taj, Terrell, TJ, has the children in your music therapy class explained to you how their music therapy helped them with their grief?
I've definitely seen it. I mean, now when we go back, they're hugging us, and it's awesome, to be honest. I don't want to say it's sad, because that's the wrong word.
I think you had mentioned before just watching them become more open to and expressing their feelings.
Absolutely.
And their stories, that we saw that week by week.
They're so sweet, too.
Yeah.
They really are. They're beautiful kids. And
then Cameron is our music therapist who's licensed. He assesses them every week, so he's able to tell us and share where they are, too, at every milestone.
Right. Yeah.
And last but not least, Sarah has a birthday. She's listening to us.
Happy birthday,
Sarah.
Happy
birthday.
All right. Cool.
All right. So is there any other tips or anything else that you'd want to share with us that we missed, Sharon?
I think one of the things that we talked about a little bit was, you know, taking that responsibility. I think that's an important something important that people need to remember, is that we have accountability for taking at least 1% responsibility. Otherwise, we become victims, and you don't want to become a victim to your grief. You don't want it to be a badge that you wear proudly. I didn't want to wear that badge, you know, that I was a survivor of two friends to suicide. I wanted to be able to address my grief and move forward, because I know my friends wouldn't want me to be stuck in that pain associated with it. So, you know, if you don't take responsibility...
And is it responsibility for your feelings?
It's responsibility for how you react and your feelings to the losses. Taking responsibility in that sense and not allowing or putting the blame on other people so that they have, you know, it's up to them to fix it, which, you know, in some cases they may not.
And is it, you know, and I'll give you an example, like, so if I'm feeling sad and someone calls me and they trigger me, I can't say then this person made me feel sad. It's my own responsibility in terms of my own feelings.
Exactly.
That person just may have been calling and said something, and maybe it's the natural process in terms of the healing as well that's
right.
happening.
We use the example
So it's kind of like learning how to workshop with each other and how to move through the negative emotions, because ultimately, as a society, we're not really taught how to do that with one another. So it's kind of having like compassion and patience with one another to have true understanding to
right.
grow.
Right. It's like sitting at a stoplight and having somebody not move forward when the light turns green, and you have a choice of how you're going to react. You can either honk the horn, or you can, you know, just take it in stride. You can let it ruin your whole day, right? or you can accept it and just let it roll off your back. So,
well, thank you so much, Sharon. So we are fundraising for our next Music Heals class for children who are suffering loss and grief to find hope and inspiration through learning how to write and record their own story into a song. And we hope that if you find what we are doing is helpful to you, then you will help us turn grief into positive action. A donation of any amount will help make a huge impact on a child's life and empower them to grieve, grow, and heal. Thank you very much for considering this opportunity to make a difference with us. And please spread the word. The more donations and support we have, then the more children we can help.
And my disclaimer, we are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people, like John Legend says, that are experiencing loss and have experienced death. And we're just sharing our story to try to help you overcome it.
If you are here in Los Angeles and are interested in learning more about our guest Sharon's work in grief Reiki, did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
Or in the grief recovery method, please go to Sharon's website. It's www.grief-reiki. Okay, also I'll say it again. www.grief-reiki.com or call her at 1-800-458-7348.
And to all of our listeners, we will be here next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday. Henry will be here next Wednesday.
The Foundation of Podcasts will be here next Wednesday. But please make sure you tune in, you listen, you ask questions, you participate. I will be tuning in as well. You could visit us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. And if you're listening to the recording of our show and want to share your questions, like I said, make sure you reach out to us on social media.
Taj Jackson, social media.
Twitter, at DDJ Foundation. Facebook, DEE Jackson Foundation. Instagram, at DEE Jackson Foundation. And the website is www.ddjf.org.
Great, thank you.
That's pretty much it. And Sharon, we look forward to your book. I hope it's going along well.
Thank you.
On behalf of all of us, we are so thankful to have you, and you're awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.